Dr. Cunningham, we should make it clear from the outset that I am employed by NIU and invested in the SURS, State University's Retirement System. I assume you are as well?
Yes, I am.
Well, I'd like to begin by having you describe, in a nutshell, the challenges faced by SERS and the other state pension systems.
Well, we do think this is possible. It's going to require a great deal of creative solutions and collaboration across the different sectors and interest groups, you know, including employees, the employers, the universities, community colleges, school districts, the leaders in our state government, the pension systems, labor, employee organizations all across the board. And these groups have been collaborating really for the last 18 to 24 months, and we're reaching a point now where we're probably, moving toward a solution, whatever that solution is, in my opinion.
You think by the fall session or even during this the current session?
The likelihood is that certainly some actions might be taken in the spring session, but given the complexity of this whole situation, there may be work left to be done in the fall. We'll see.
Okay. The governor's proposed pension overhaul would, among other things, phase in the responsibility for paying the normal costs of pensions to employers. This includes school districts, community colleges, and public universities. How would NIU absorb that increased cost?
Well, the normal cost is the cost of funding current obligations for the pension system. So it's the cost of paying for benefits for a given year plus the value of the benefits accrued in that year. And that's the normal cost. And if the normal cost is fully paid by the contributors, that being employees and employer, every year, then a fund like the SERS will normally be nearly 100% funded because given the life cycle of the fund, the contributions are there. There are investment returns on those contributions, pardon me, so that when the fund reaches a level of maturity, which is where ours is now, the assets are sufficient to fund the benefits. In Illinois, that's not been the model for many decades, and because the employees have certainly made their contributions, but the state, acting as the employer, has not, in many respects, made the full contribution. So the system is very underfunded. One method of reducing obligations on the state to make an unfunded liability plan possible is the reallocation of normal cost obligations directly to the employers, which is the way it was prior to about 1967. And most states, most institutions across the country are designed that way so that their budgets are adapted to these benefit obligations. Whereas in our case, that's not been the case for, 45 years or so. So it's not something that the universities or other employing organizations are prepared to undertake other than in a phased, very somewhat limited, phased, controlled approach so that it doesn't destabilize already very thin budgets for these institutions.
So what effect would this have on the one cost that NIU can control, which is tuition?
Well, it could have a very serious effect on tuition. However, that all of the institutions, especially Northern, will take every step to minimize that because it's not feasible to translate the full value of normal costs onto tuition. If that was done, normal costs right now are about 12% of payroll. And if that was to be translated in tuition, that would be about a 44% increase in tuition, which simply is not feasible. It's not realistic. So other alternatives in terms of the phase-in, in terms of the extent of normal costs that are transferred to employers, we think the state should still continue to centrally contribute 6.2%, which is the Social Security benchmark for private and public sector employers nationwide, and that's a reasonable starting point.
The governor's plan also calls for a 3% hike in employee contributions toward their pensions, which would, I believe, as I understand it, be a change for current workers. I'd like to turn to the Illinois Constitution and what it says about public pensions. This is from Article 13, Section 5. Membership in any pension or retirement system of the state, any unit of local government or school district, or any agency or instrumentality thereof, shall be an enforceable contractual relationship, the benefits of which shall not be diminished or impaired. You're probably not a lawyer, but when you read the governor's proposal, when you read the governor's proposal and hold it next to the Constitution, do you see a conflict?
I think that a number of observers see a conflict. No, I'm not a legal scholar by any means, but have worked with this and you know, communicate and talk with experts on these topics all the time. And the language in the Illinois Constitution is strong language as far as this goes. It dates back clear to the 1970 Constitutional Convention, where trends in state funding of these normal cost obligations were already apparent. And that was is in the history of the Pension Protection Clause that you just read. Requiring participants to make choices among severe benefit changes in exchange for a funding plan, which is very important, but in exchange for a funding plan that is already the obligation of the state based upon prior accruals of benefits that have been established, doesn't seem to be the best approach, especially in light of the Constitution. We want to take these proposals, though, seriously, as we have other proposals. And in the end, we believe there will be some room for compromise and for other options to be placed out there in addition to what was proposed by the governor.
Would NIU join a lawsuit challenging any pension law that it considers unconstitutional?
Well, the constitutional protection clause is applicable to the individual participant. NIU, as an employer, represents its employees and has an interest in representing its employees and their welfare because employees have joined the institution and dedicated their careers here, and they've relied on this benefit and on the Constitution. So they can't go back and commit to other career options or financial planning options that they might have done had they not relied upon the terms of the plan. So we think that's very important. But it would be individual participants and employee organizations that would be most likely to litigate should something like this pass. It is important to take account of the fact that this is a proposal. It's not a bill. It's not been passed by any committees or members of the sectors of the General Assembly. It is simply a proposal that is being looked at. It is moving the debate forward somewhat and shaping it a little bit. And so we're going to work very directly with this in the coming weeks.
I understand CSRS is an important part of the package that NIU can offer prospective employees, a package designed to make NIU more competitive in the search for talented faculty and staff. If the governor's proposal were approved by the legislature and he signed it, how would it affect recruitment of faculty and staff at NIU?
Well, we think there are a great number of issues there, and that truly is the interest, a major interest of the employing institutions, universities, community colleges, school districts, is number one, the effect on retaining current human resources. Our institutions all have a fairly large proportion of the workforce that is eligible to retire. And so proposals like this create a great deal of uncertainty for participants, and so it translates to a retention issue. Then, in light of that, for example, at Northern, we're probably 2.5 times beyond what our normal retirement rate would be right now. And so if this continues, we know that that will have an effect on retirements. And then in the labor market, with the so-called Tier 2 plan, that is already a difficult and challenging program under which to recruit faculty, staff, professionals from the national labor markets, which we have to interact with.
And you mentioned Tier 2. That's according to a pension overhaul law that was passed that raises the costs and reduces some benefits for workers hired after January 1st. Was it 2010?
2011. Right.
Okay. The University of Illinois Institute on Government and Public Affairs has unveiled its own plan to save CSERS and possibly the other public pensions. What are the chief differences between the Institute's plan and that of the governor?
Well, there are a number of differences, and first maybe the similarities. The Institute's plan and the governor's plan refer to stabilization versus reform. And President Peters has talked about this a lot, too. This is more of a stabilization measure. Pension reform is more related to reforming programs that are believed to be necessary to reform, usually downwards, in order to make them more competitive with benchmarks. The normal cost of the state university's retirement system has been around 10.3% for decades, which is relatively modest for a system that is not coordinated with Social Security. And that's a very important aspect of this plan, as mentioned by the IGPA, that this is the baseline retirement security plan for university employees. And so, the national contribution rate for Social Security is 6.2%, and the state has not had to pay that. Instead, if you look at almost any benchmark for large employers, 10.3% is a relatively modest all-in total investment level in pension benefits. And so stabilization is the appropriate word for this. The IGPA proposal did highlight the importance of a stable funding plan. The governor's proposal does the same, a very similar thing. In fact, it indicates that the funding plan would have a similar priority of obligation for state funds as bonds, and that's very positive and very important. That alone will have a big effect, we think, on stabilizing the pension systems and the budgeting process related to these contributions. But thereafter, there are a wide number of differences. Now, the IGPA proposal did speak to an increase of employee contributions, a 3% increase, along with a shift of normal costs. But both of those would be phased in, and the limit of normal costs shifted to employers would be 3% as well under the IGPA proposal, versus the entire normal cost shift that we see in the governor's proposal. So that's a one key aspect of differentiation between the two. The governor's proposal did not requires choices, a loss of a reduction of benefits under any of the options selected. And the IGPA document prioritizes the preservation of already accrued, vested, established benefits pursuant to the state constitution. The reason for that is to assure stabilization of the workforce, of our human resources, because the cost of losing and not being able to recruit human capital assets in higher education is great and could rival some of the cost implications of the pension system. So those are some of the differences. The IGPA plan is more of a shared model of inputs in terms of the budgeting of the pension plan, and whereas the governor's proposal appears to shift a lot of that, most of it, to the employees and the employing organizations in exchange for a funding plan.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, President Peters and you have touted this idea as a possible fix, one that might be the better, the least worst option?
The IGPA?
Yeah.
Yes, we have discussed the IGPA proposal as a well-thought-out, reasonable, and viable plan that is consistent with our priorities of preserving employee benefits that they have relied upon, of creating real fund sources to help offset normal costs so that the state can allocate assets toward the funding plan, And then the hybrid aspect, the future-looking components of the IGPA plan also take account of our need to be competitive in recruiting our faculty and staff in the national markets.
Correct me if I'm wrong, the IGPA proposal does seem to be the most serious compromise proposal out there, the one that's getting the most attention and support in the system. But again, I'm not a lawyer, but when I look at the Constitution, I do see changes to current workers' benefits, which could draw a constitutional challenge. Do I understand correctly?
Oh, it would appear as such. And in talking with employee organizations and others, it's certainly as presented, because of the requirement to make choices, all of which have an effect on benefits. In exchange for a funding plan, which is a good thing, but a funding plan that is already an obligation of the state, it would appear that it would implicate already accrued benefits. And that could have certainly have implications with respect to the language in the Constitution.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you would like to add?
Well, I think, you know, if it's relevant, that you know, we see that the governor's plan, the IGPA proposal, all of these speak to the scope and depth of this crisis. All of these, even Senate Bill 512, which was active in the fall session last year, demonstrate that some set of options and alternatives must be put together to stabilize this situation. And it's in the best interests of participants, of retirees, of the employing organizations, and the state, certainly. And so we're going to continue working with our leaders and with the other sectors that are involved to work on options and alternatives. We're open to that, and we believe that that a solution can be accomplished in a thoughtful way. And so we'll continue to keep our employees informed as much as we can, and we encourage employees to carefully watch this. We're at a point where this is kind of entered a new phase in terms of the development of a solution in Springfield. And so we'll. It's important that all participants monitor this carefully as we go forward.
Off the top of your head, how many employees, current workers at NIU, would be affected by any change to the pension system?
We have approximately 4,000 employees that participate in the pension system. And, of course, we have a much larger number overall of retirees who work through their annuitants association otherwise on this issue. But currently we have about 4,000 employees. The Tier 1, these changes would apply to what's referred to as Tier 1, which was the defined benefit plan in existence prior to January 1, 2011, when Tier 2 took effect. And so there's a great number of current and past employees who have vested service in Tier 1.
Stephen Cunningham is the Vice President for Administration and Human Resources at Northern Illinois University. Thanks very much.
Thank you.